It's the Love Speak series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Sally Lou Loveman is a mom, speaker, author, former audience producer for The Oprah Winfrey Show, and founder of Love Speaks.
The number one fear people have is speaking in public. It's actually the one fear I don't have. Join me for the Love Speak series, where we leave fear behind and we speak love, like loving our story, loving speaking, doing what we love, loving each other, and loving ourselves. Our stories are what connect us, and they make us better humans. Join me and my Love Speaks friends for stories, laughs, inspiration, speaker tips, and some unexpected truth.
I am so happy to be back podcasting. It's been a minute or two or 12. I'm really excited today also because our guest, well, let's just say her book title caught my attention. I lost my father 8 years ago. And when I was writing my book, I felt like he was literally sitting next to me, so much so that I didn't want to, finish my book. So, I think that writing is one of the only ways really truly to heal and to keep our loved ones close. So today I am so excited that, I said yes to Laura Carney's email when she said, I wrote a book and I'd love to be on your podcast. The title, My Father's List, How Living My Dad's Dreams Set Me Free. I was like, yes, please. I'm a huge lover of memoirs. I wrote one. I love them. It's all that I read. Sometimes I take a break for fiction. But for the most part, I love memoirs because they're so much more interesting because they're real. So Laura is a writer. She's a magazine copy editor and lives in New York City. She's worked for countless and written for, I should say, for countless newspapers and magazines. And now she's here with her first book, her first memoir and her first book. And so she can add writer and author, another way of writing author, to her list of many, many accomplishments. I'm so happy to welcome you here on the Love Speak series. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. What an amazing introduction. Thank you.
Oh, please. So you're on your book tour. You're at your stepbrother's house. And where are you on the tour?
I think I'm at about stop nine.
Nine. And how many stops do you have?
22.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me just tell you a little thing about my book tour. I didn't have a publisher. I self-published. So it was my own tour that I started. But something named COVID shut it down.
Oh, no. So,
and people are like, well, you know, you can do it again. I'm like, mm-mm. It's kind of a one-shot deal, in my opinion. Like, I'm not, if I had a publisher, I probably would. But yeah, no, I think I'll just keep going, keep trucking along. Well, are you tired? Or are you exhilarated?
No, it's like I go back and forth. Sometimes I will have my moments where I'm like, oh, this is doing a lot right now.
Yeah.
But luckily, yeah. You know, I'm an endurance runner. So it's like, you know, once in a while, if I am getting especially tired, like today, I got up at 7 a.m. because I went to go talk on the radio.
Yeah.
What actually goes through my head is like, this is not an Ironman.
Right.
This is not a triathlon.
Right. Right. That's what I do in my own work. I'm like, this is not the Oprah Winfrey Show. You're okay. Yeah. You don't have to make the deadline. It's your deadline. You can disappoint yourself today. It's fine.
Everything is relative.
You train. That's how you're trained. If you're an endurance runner, that's how you do it. Okay. So you're 25 and your father dies tragically and unexpectedly in a car crash. So tell me, first of all, I loved your book. So thank you. Tell me what happens to your life at that point.
I had actually just moved to New York for a magazine internship that summer. And I really was just trying to break into the business. People right. would laugh at the fact that it was $10 a day, but
true.
I already finished college. So they couldn't really give me any college credit anymore. And, you know, I felt that was going to be the beginning of my adult life. And then the unthinkable happened. It was a teenager making a phone call because she was lost. And you know, I immediately thought it was a drunk driver, but it was in the middle of the right. afternoon. And I sort of had already set a few plans in motion. Like, for example, I had just met my future husband on the internet, and he was supposed to come and join me in New York. He was going to move in with a friend. And we had this very romantic.
I thought you were going to say he was going to move in with me. I'm like, no.
No. I was only 25.
I know. I know you're happily married, but I was like, yeah. I didn't know that part.
No, okay, in fact, you will be very proud of him because he was the one who really insisted that we not do that. And yeah. We moved in with his friend. We actually were together for 5 years before we moved in together.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, I mean, we always lived in the same city. In the same
right.
Place.
Right.
So, you know, he moved across the country still. We still had our trip, but it was now a very different kind of trip. And I had two jobs at the time, I think. I was free. I was still at the internship. And then I was also working at Outback Steakhouse as a hostess. And I think we canceled both. We did get a very small settlement from my dad's insurance company, which helped to get through that year because I ended up making the choice to stay in New York and to keep pursuing my dreams because I just
yeah.
What my dad would have wanted.
Right. Wow. That's yeah. And so then you're 25. How old were you? Was it soon after? I read the book, but I don't remember exactly when you found the list.
It seems like it would be soon after, but it was actually 13 years later.
So explain this list that you find 13 years later.
Yeah. So my brother found it. He had just moved into his first house. And I always joke my brother and I tend to do things at the same time. Like we graduated college at the same time. We got married the same year. He was about to get married and I had just gotten married to the same man I was dating when my father died. And my dad actually got to meet Stephen.
Oh, that's nice.
Five days later, he passed. So at least
is your brother older or younger?
My brother's younger. Yeah.
Okay.
So he found the list when he was moving into his first house. And, you know, like I said, he was about to get married. And they just were very excited about it. And they thought it was something I would want to see. And they had made this plan to frame it and give it to me at their wedding, you know, for the
right.
Party gifts. But they ended up just showing it to us because they were so excited. And right. It was this thing where it was like, you know, for those months after my wedding, I had been, I think, going through a bit of an existential crisis. That's the best way I can explain it, because I felt because I was now finally married, you know, like I said, it had been 13 years with the same person. I thought I was supposed to be something, you know, like settle down and be a wife and be a mother and be more like my own mom, for example, even though my mom was always a working mother and my parents divorced when I was very young. I just always felt that would be my path. And I was a little bit concerned because we went on our honeymoon and we decided we would rather travel the country and write about it. You know, or like my husband's a photographer, right. So he wanted to be a travel photographer.
Well, I mean, you're a writer, he's a photographer. It makes sense.
Yeah. And it was sort of a thing that sounded crazy to everyone we told. And when we found my dad's list, it was like, just in that moment, I remembered who he was, that he was this creative, free spirit, adventurous person. And it was like it just occurred to me immediately. I needed to do this. I needed to finish it for him. And I didn't know at that time that's what was going on for me. I just thought I need to give him a legacy and maybe I'll raise awareness of distracted driving in the process.
Oh, right.
What was actually going on was my soul was calling to me and it needed me to do this because this list was going to give me permission to be who I truly am.
Well, that's so cool. And we have to talk about that piece, but that's really the underlying theme of all of this. But for anyone watching or listening, and they don't know what this book is, explain what this list is. So explain what it is.
He wrote the list in 1978. It's 60 things he hoped to do in his life. And, you know, he wouldn't have called it a bucket list. They didn't have bucket lists in 1978. It was just a wish list and experiences he hoped to have. And I knew that he wrote lists of like famous people he wanted to meet someday. Like I'd heard about that as a kid.
Right.
So it wasn't shocking when we found it, but I was very surprised that so many of the items were, you know, serious, like, you know, like he wanted to make money on the stock market. And then like every item after that gets more and more expensive, like drive a Corvette, start a charitable fund, send my wife on $1,000 shopping spree, you know, and help Laura win a scholarship. So they were actual goals for his family too.
Right. Some of them were cracking me up, like swim the width of a river,
yeah.
Own a tux. A black tux.
Yeah.
You know, and then there were things, you know, like parachute, you know, and or out of a plane and you know, go to the Super Bowl and all these things. I mean, and he'd only checked off how many?
Five.
Five.
Yeah.
So that means you had 55 things to accomplish.
Well, he marked one as having failed at, it was pay my dad back $1,000 plus interest, which is, you know, that's the kind of thing a 29-year-old would write. And I think probably my grandfather passed away before he could do that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But are you telling me, so again, for anyone listening, Laura, you decide with your husband's support that you're going to take on this list and live it and do it, accomplish it for him so that you can be completing his dream. Little did you know you'd be setting yourself free of whatever it was you were dreaming.
There really wasn't a lot of thought put into it. I mean, it was like my heart just said yes. And at that point in time, I'd been working as an activist. That kind of just crossed my path quite serendipitously too. I didn't look to become an activist. I thought what had happened to my dad was just a fluke accident, you know?
Right.
Instead, I realized, I guess it was about 2013, the same year my husband proposed, I realized that the phone had been part of it. And it was because an article came across my desk at Good Housekeeping where I worked. And I started speaking in high schools and I became a marathon runner. I started doing that, raising money. But I felt a little frustrated with it because it seemed to me that we had educated people, but it was still happening. Mm-hmm. And I sort of just felt, well, what else can be done here? And as a writer, I just kept thinking about, you know, if there's a story that people can relate to, maybe that would help. So that really was my first instinct. But I was completely unaware of the fact that I was still letting feelings of fear and phobias and trauma and grief inhibit my life and inhibit how I lived. So really it was something that had to set me free.
But it is pretty normal to have fear and worry about, I guess you had to quit your job or you had to take a leave or something. And then a lot of these things were expensive things to do, like go to Vienna or go to, you know, the Super Bowl, whatever was on the list.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just like that's a hard choice. Can you talk about that?
I just figured if I could space them out well enough, I could figure out a way to do it. And you know, it became a much more faith-oriented existence that I wouldn't have had before. I knew I could take on freelance jobs. We had just done that for our own wedding. We both paid for our wedding together and it had turned out very well. So I really just thought I would find a way. I would figure it out.
And you did.
I did actually get laid off from my job in the second year. It wasn't my choice. Oh. But that wasn't a choice I ever would have made. And it was one of the best, you know, I know that's a cliche. People always say that, right? Like it's the best thing to ever happen to me.
But
it really was because I wasn't getting the manuscript done and I already had an agent by then. So to have this severance after working somewhere for so long and now have
great
time, it was like, my husband was thrilled. I mean, he wasn't even worried. He's like, oh,
that's a gift.
You have time to write. Yeah. Everything with the list was like that. Like things would happen that on the face of them seemed like a loss or a scary development. And then later it would turn out, oh, thank goodness this happened because I needed to lose this part of my identity so I could find room for this new other part.
Right.
And that thing that I had had before, I'd sort of outgrown anyway.
Right. You know, you've unlocked something. I talk about it a lot with friends and family and even in my work about grief and grieving. And I think that we need to look at grief in such a different way. I have a very good friend who has this beautiful grief platform called the Memory Circle, which brings people together to grieve as a community so that you don't feel alone. But what I also want to say is that in celebration of the life your father lived, you're keeping him alive in your work. And he is a part of your life. He's not physically here, but he is a part of your life. I do the same thing with my father. And I think that when we invite our loved one who we've lost in, and we really make it an invitation, like we pray or we ask or we say, you know, send me a sign, but like, be really specific, you know, I mean, I've been so specific and it's happened and it's like, and it's so comforting to know. And, you know, grief is so hard. Losing someone you love is so hard. But if we can look at it in ways that are joyous and that continue to help you grow, because you're now growing and it's really because you lost your father. in a lot of ways.
I don't even think of it as lost. As crazy as it might sound with the language that we use, I don't even think of him as lost anymore. I think of him.
Then you've just said it.
He doesn't have a body. You know,
right.
There was a day where he transitioned and he no longer has a body.
Right.
And that was his life path. I didn't get to choose what his life path was going to be. No more than he could choose what mine is going to be. You know?
No more could he choose what his was. Right. So it's like he had, you know, we all have written what our life path is, like you said. And I love that you just corrected me because it's right. Don't look at it as loss, you know, look at it as a different relationship. And I do say that actually, because I always say I have a spiritual relationship with my father now. I want to read something from your book. I there's so much here, but when you go to the Super Bowl, and you were there for the Jennifer Lopez Shakira Super Bowl.
I was How shocked cool. by people's responses to that they thought it was scandalous, because I'm sitting there like, oh, these athletes.
Exactly. That's the way I looked at it too. I thought it was phenomenal. I was jumping up and down and screaming. I thought they were phenomenal. But here's what you wrote. This was the 54th Super Bowl. My dad was 54 when he died. There were 54 items on the list. I guess that means because he had accomplished a few of the 60. I'd cycled 54 miles in Tucson, where you were. The final score for the Rose Bowl had been 54. Maybe instead of focusing on August 8th, the day he died, I should focus on the number of years he lived, I thought. Super Bowl 54 was Super Bowl in Greek letters LIV. It was spelled out right before me in big, bright letters, live. I love that so much.
I'm getting chills hearing you say my words back to me.
I know. So I do too. So it's really lovely to hear.
Probably means they came from him.
Probably, if you're getting the chills, like that's where it is. So yeah, when that synchronicity starts happening in numbers and objects and music and things that just happen, and you always know it's your loved one when you feel it in your body, like you just had chills.
Like full body chills.
Yeah. When you have chills, when your body tells you it's real before your mind or your heart even tells you it's real, that's when you know it's real. So I think that's so beautiful. I would love it. I don't want to read it. Do you have your book with you or no? Oh, you probably have it memorized.
I can get it real quick. I have one right over here. Hold on a second.
Okay, go ahead. I want you, as you're getting your book, I want you to read what the list is, because I think it's just hilarious. I would read it, but I want you to read it.
Sure. Okay. The list.
This is your father's list of things he wanted to do in his lifetime that you have done for him.
Okay. Things I would like to do in my lifetime. And he underlined, doesn't look like this in the book, but he underlined would like to.
Okay.
Underlined that, which I think probably meant like, these are not imperatives.
Right.
These aren't right. have to's.
Right.
Number one, live a long, healthy life, at least to the year 2020, which turned out to be much more challenging than I thought it would be because of the pandemic.
Right.
Provide a comfortable standard of living for my family. Write and have a few novels published, have 5 songs recorded, make more money than I need, talk with the president, make 3 good family or friends movies, play the piano or guitar, type 40 words a minute correctly, sell millions of dollars worth of merchandise, make my wife feel happy, healthy, pretty, and young all her life, give my children the most love, the best education, and best example I can give, visit New Orleans, Paris, London, Vienna, Dresden / Berlin. I think Berlin was added later.
Maybe.
Los Angeles, San Diego, Las Vegas, Chicago, St. Thomas, run 10 miles straight, swim the width of a river. I actually did that in Nashville. That's why I came down here to do a reading tonight.
Right.
Meet a number one seeded tennis player in a tournament, play golf in the 70s a few times.
I want to talk to you about that one. Okay, go on.
Correspond with the Pope. Speak to a TV audience. Do a comedy monologue in a nightclub. That's one of the ones that he checked off, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Interviewed on a radio program. I did that this morning, so technically we now have both checked that off. get my picture in a national magazine, make money on the stock market, set up a charitable fund, drive a Corvette, teach a class about wine, have a 34-inch waist again, own a $200 suit, own a black tux. I mean, I guess he wanted to make sure no one thought he meant like powder blue because it was 19.
Right.
Right. Then go on a $1,000 shopping spree, help Laura win a scholarship, own a large house with our own land, have my own tennis court, see a World Series game live. He did that one and he wrote the score next to it. It said Phillies 2, Toronto 0.
Go Phillies.
We're from Delaware. Go to a Super Bowl game, see the NCAA basketball finals, go to the Rose Bowl, surf in the Pacific Ocean, grow a watermelon.
That's my favorite.
Own a wine cellar of fine wines, plant an apple tree, skydive at least once, go sailing by myself, be invited to a political convention, help my parents enjoy their retirement. He checked that off and I did too. Pay back my dad $1,000 plus interest. That's the one that he wrote that he had failed. But I actually ran into a situation like that with my father-in-law during the list. So I believe I checked that off. Own a great record collection. He checked that off and I inherited half of them. So I think I can too.
Nice.
Develop an impressive library, ride a horse fast, sing at my daughter's wedding and dance at my grandchildren's weddings.
Mm. So what did you do about, well, oh, you hadn't found the list when you got married, right?
I had actually, I had just gotten married. So it's like I had to creatively figure out how to do those levels.
Oh, right. Because they were going to frame it for you for your present. So who sang at your wedding? Like, how did you do that?
So my dad, one of his many jobs in sales, he was a salesman for most of his life. And one of his jobs was he was a liquor distributor. So he went out to the Robert Mondavi Vineyards in Napa and he bought this wine and he brought it home and he wrote on the top, the finest wine America has ever made. And on the bottom, he wrote open on Laura's wedding day. Oh. And my mom saved it. So it had been in her basement, three different basements for 38 years. And I had this moment where I was very upset because my dad wasn't, I thought he wasn't going to be at my wedding to walk me down the aisle. And she said, I have an idea. And she went down to the basement and got the wine. And she said, we can still drink it. We can still bring it to New Mexico. We were having a wedding that was maybe, I think, 30 people because it was a destination. And that's what we ended up doing. We ended up serving the wine. And, you know, it's funny because everyone sort of debated for a while whether it would be any good.
Right.
So old. But it turned out that particular year, that vintage beat the French wines in the Judgment of Paris. It was that
your dad was right. The finest wine.
1974 absolutely was the finest wine America had ever made. And everybody loved it. It was incredible. And you know, it served this purpose too of making me feel good because I felt like I was an older bride. And instead I started looking at it like maybe I'm better. Maybe I'm getting better, you know? And
Like a fine wine.
Yeah. And that's what my dad would want me to think, you know? And I felt like our bellies were singing.
Oh, that's cute. Well, that's why I asked because like some of the things on the list you actually did. I mean, all of the things on the list you actually did as it was written, but some of them was left to be to interpretation. Like tell us about golfing in the '70s and buying a $200 suit.
Well, it said golf in the '70s a few times and I had never played golf a day in my life. And the way we ended up doing that was, you know, my stepdad and my mom are in their 70s and I played with them a few times. It was usually about 70 degrees out.
Right.
I first played on 9-hole courses and I did score on like in the '70s on a 9-hole course.
Wow.
Then we went to San Diego where it's supposed to always be 70 degrees. It was actually more like 95 when we were there. My stepdad had this great idea of why don't we play best ball? Because when you play best ball, it's like whoever had hit the closest one to the hole, like that's everybody progresses to that. Or at least that's how we did it. That's how he taught me to play it. So by the end, we had played 18 holes and I think we were at 79. So I felt like
in the 70s
for me. But the thing about that one, though, was it was so enriching for me to do something fun with my stepdad, you know, something athletic. So I always felt like that was more what that one was about.
And what's so lovely is that it brought in the family and I'm sure friends, you know, it brought in your mom and, you know, your mom and dad had been divorced. It brought in your mom, brought in your stepfather, brought in your husband and your brother and maybe your stepbrother. I don't know,
everybody.
But
Everybody. Even people who didn't know him, strangers would become strangers. Friends. I have all of these people now, like this huge network and family in my life that have brought my dad to my doorstep.
It's so beautiful.
It's like some of the things I've even become like rituals, you know, like, for example, you mentioned own a $200 suit. Right. I ended up making that a triathlon suit because I injured myself on one of the list items. And I was really afraid I couldn't run marathons anymore.
Which one?
The tennis list item. I tore a tendon in my foot, which I got surgery for and recuperated from. But, you know, I started thinking, well, hey, I had to swim across a river. You know, I cycled 54 miles in the desert. Maybe I should try a triathlon. And I thought I'm going to try this new thing, which seems impossible, but it makes sense. I've learned how to juggle all this stuff.
Right. So it's like all these things.
Not that much. Yeah.
Throw a triathlon on the list.
Why not?
Wow. Well, but I love
the triathlon is my goal. Yeah.
Right. Of course. But I love that you made interpretations, you know, it wasn't about getting it perfect because like you said, he's underlined would like to, and, he would like to do these things. It's not a, you know, have to. So the way you interpreted it was how it worked for you, and that was the beauty. And then you discover all these new things. And then like, if you hadn't swum that, the width of the river, maybe you would have never done a triathlon.
No, I would have been too afraid of the swimming.
Yeah.
Open water. I went in the Hudson River for one of them.
Okay. That's terrifying to me. That's terrifying. What was it like jumping out of a plane? I'd rather jump out of a plane.
Exhilarating. It's the kind of thing where if you do it, it's like nothing could ever scare me again.
Right.
The same way.
Right.
And almost, there's almost a feeling of maybe I'm alive for a reason.
Yeah.
Survive something like that.
Yeah. Well, I always say, you know, if anyone is thinking like, well, you know, if I found a list like that, I'd be like, I would frame it. That's as far as I would go. I'm saying not me. I would frame it like, oh, that's so nice. That's my dad. What a dreamer. But the fact that you did it is ballsy as F. And, but what I love reminding people all the time, and I think this is a great message from your book, is to do something that scares you, be to remind yourself that you are alive, to live well, to be appreciative. And for me professionally, I like to do things that are scary to remind myself to go back to do the things I already do well better. Because if I could do that, like I always say, because I did stand-up comedy and it's terrifying, but if I could do that, I can speak to anyone. I can stand on any stage. Like I'm good. Like, and that's
hilarious. That makes sense.
But that's what being doing something exhilarating does. It pushes you forward in your life in the most unexpected ways and beautiful ways. So if we never push ourselves, like anyone listening, at least try one thing. You don't have to do 54 things or 60 things. You just have to do one thing in your life. Maybe more than one thing, but one thing to show yourself that you've got it. You can do it. You can depend on yourself.
Well, and I think it's that moment you're talking about too, right? Like the moment I imagine that you're about to go on stage.
Oh,
the moment I was about to jump out of a plane or I'm about to do a triathlon.
Right.
It's this moment of, can I do this? And you're afraid and you just decide I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And that to me is the best celebration of my dad. And also when I would do these things with other people who were also afraid, because my dad was so good at being present and just being there with you in that moment. And every time I make myself do things like that, I'm reconnecting with him. And
yes,
the spirit is helping me even now.
Well, I feel like in the beginning part, before you were talking really about the list, and when you're talking about your childhood, like he was such your cheerleader. Like he was raw team.
Yeah, he had a lot of his own issues though, too.
But that's okay. But he, I mean, whatever. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying, but he was your cheerleader. Yeah, and I would imagine that you hear him cheering you on, you know, as you're doing all these accomplishments.
That's true. But really, I think it was writing the book that brought that to the surface for me. It was, I remembered him differently than that. And as I finally had, you know, write and have a few novels published, that's a list item. I couldn't back out. In the past, I had chickened out from things like that, but I had to do it. And as I sat there and made myself do it, these wonderful memories of him started to come to my head and onto the page and into my heart. And it's like, if I hadn't taken that step to revisit these painful memories and the difficult things that I lived through, I don't know if I would have had that. I don't know if I could have grasped it. And you're absolutely right. That is who he was my whole life. He always was my mom is also my biggest fan. I don't want to take away her title.
Right.
He always just believed. He'd always told me I could do anything I set my mind to.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is beautiful. Did you discover, you've described him as a mysterious man. Did you discover anything about him through this work? What was your big discovery? Yeah,
there's still stories coming out. I was on CBS Sunday Morning on Father's Day, and now old friends of his I'd never met before are contacting me and telling me things from his childhood that I never knew. And I would say the biggest one was how organized he was and how passionate he truly was about writing. He talked about it. He talked about the book he wrote in the 70s, which is available on Amazon now if anyone wants to buy it.
What's the title? Let's give your dad a book plug.
The Why Generation in a Why Not World. Yeah.
The Why Generation in a Why Not World. And it's W-H-Y?
Yeah. He talked about W-H-Y. Okay. Yeah. He talked about it all the time. And to the point where as a teenager, I would be eye rolling about
it. Of course.
Oh, that again. But it's actually a really great book. It's quite prophetic in some ways about issues we're dealing with even today.
Speak your dad's name. What's his name?
Michael Carney.
Michael. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And very cool.
You know, to have that, and you know, we always made tapes with him all the time every year because he was a singer, and to have his voice still in a palpable way in my life is like, you know, he really believed, and he wrote this in the book, he believed that nobody ever really dies if they've created something. And he did create his own legacy. And he has these things that I can enjoy and experience even without him being here on earth. So to have that, you know, it's just such a blessing. And to recognize that he really cared about it. You know, he was serious about writing and he was good at it. And that's okay. It's okay to live a life that's true to you as a creative person.
Right.
And anyone who doesn't let themselves do that because they're afraid or because, you know, who do they think they are? The typical gremlins that people get. I'm always
a huge
champion of helping people to move past that because if you have a story to tell and you're yearning to tell it, you need to tell it. That means
It's never if. It is everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone has a story and everyone should be speaking their story because if they don't, who will, right? And your story landed on me in so many beautiful ways. My story is not like yours and yours isn't like mine, but the pieces that remind me of my own make me feel all warm and fuzzy and the oxytocin keeps going. So that's what, and now we're connected and that's the most beautiful part of stories. So that is my mantra, like speak your story. So I love that you're speaking it and it continues to change, of course, because stories are not always over. They're always continuing. But what did your brother go on any of your adventures?
Yeah.
Which one did he do with you?
The London trip with us.
Oh, nice.
And then he also helped me check off, type 40 words a minute correctly.
I don't remember seeing that on the list.
I didn't include it in the book because it was just, you know, how do you write about typing?
but of course he
was so much better than me and faster. I mean, because we've always been very competitive with each other. But
yeah,
he more was like a little angel on my shoulder, like talking to me after each item. You know, he had already gone skydiving. He was really interested in surfing, but I don't think he has gone surfing yet. But you know, he just was offering me support from the sidelines a lot of the time.
That's so nice. And while you're on this book tour, are you finding that people are coming to you and saying, you know, I lost my dad or I lost my mom. Thank you. Or, you know, thank you. And you've made me look at my loss as a gain.
I don't know if I've heard as a gain yet. I'm still kind of early into the tour. So I think a lot of times I am meeting people who haven't necessarily read it yet, but times where they have read it, they have said that it kind of lifted them up, elevated them and gave them hope, which is what I really hoped would happen. I wrote it for my own benefit because I needed to. So, you know, I think there's this point where after you've written something, you have to let it go and it doesn't really belong to you the same way anymore.
Right. Right.
So whatever they're getting from it is a bonus, is extra.
Bonus.
But it always feels like a blessing to me that people are coming up to me as I'm signing their books and they're seeing me as a safe space. It's almost going to make me cry because
that's beautiful.
5 years old, I couldn't find that for myself. So I made it.
Yeah.
I couldn't
that's
find
beautiful.
It.
A safe space.
My dad's spirit and my husband, who was my greatest list helper, I made it.
Yeah, he sure is. He sure is. Oh, now I'm going to start to cry. It's really, it's quite beautiful. Like I whenever I open my phone, I see my dad's face and I'm just like, hi daddy. Hi papa. Like, you know, I just, he's like with me all the time. And the signs, I write about them in my own book, but since 2020, when I published it, I've had, 12 more stories to tell, or I don't know how many, but he's always there. Like he's always there. What list item did you enjoy the most?
Oh gosh. Because I enjoyed them in so many different ways, but I think I'm going to say Vienna.
Vienna.
Because I don't think, I always say that, they happen when I was ready. And I don't think I would have been ready to do that in the first year or the second, the third, fourth, fifth, even. I had
how many years? Was it 5 years?
It took me almost 6 years, years and 11 months, but I took that trip. I knew it would be expensive for me. And I ended up going by myself. My mom was going to go, and then due to a health thing, she couldn't. So she sort of helped contribute to it financially. And I called her every night. So she was there.
Yeah.
Right. But she and my dad both loved Vienna because they used to watch the Perry Como Christmas special.
Oh.
And they would watch the Vienna boys. My dad loved that choir.
Right.
So
the choir.
To name me Eric, which is
that's hysterical.
Choir. So, and I'm not surprised he loved Vienna because it's such a cultural mecca.
Right.
It's a hub, and it's a city of music, and that's what he was about.
Exactly. So,
I was very nervous. I didn't really let on to it, but I was very nervous about taking that trip alone for 2 weeks. But, I did my research like I always do, and I found out it's actually the safest European city to visit as a woman alone.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. I know. Taking a trip alone, that is a list item for anyone. It's I've never done it.
But I think for women too.
I've never done it. I just realized that.
Yeah, I don't want to sound sexist about this, but I think so often, and I don't think it even... obviously, if you're a mother, I think you're going to feel this a little bit more. And I'm not a mother, but, but I'm a daughter and I'm a wife,
right.
I'm a sister,
right.
I'm an aunt, and I'm a friend. And in all of these roles in my life and in my work, too, I'm always trying to be there and be nurturing and consider what everyone else wants.
Right.
And to take a moment in my life where I'm like, no, I'm going to do what I want for 2 weeks was quite like earth shattering in a way.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
cool.
I had to enjoy my own company.
Even though your dad was with you.
Yes, of course. He was there. Yeah. Oh, there were lots of moments on that trip where I noticed an empty seat or noticed like, oh, how did that happen? Oh, I went to see a violin quartet play in a cathedral. And it was just, if you can imagine this cathedral, just dripping in gold and just gorgeous. And it's dim. The lights are dim. And I had this silver thermos and it fell over twice.
Oh.
There was an empty seat right next to me. And I just kept thinking like he had done that because he thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely, from what I can see how you've written, he's a jokester. He's funny.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's how I always know too. Like you said, your dad gives you signs. With my dad, it's something very, very funny.
Funny. Right. What was the list item that you feared the most? I mean, there are several on there that are would be scary to me.
That I feared the most.
I mean, ride a horse fast. I would be scared of that.
I was a little bit afraid of that. I think probably sailing.
Yes, alone. Oh my God, wouldn't be able to do it.
Like, how do you go sailing by yourself?
I'd have to do it in a pool.
Well, I found a pretty good workaround though, because I found this marina in San Diego where we were going for the golf item, and also San Diego was an item. I tried to like triple, double, whatever I could.
Wow.
At the time.
Right.
And I found this marina that taught lessons to kids in these little boats.
Perfect.
The size of a bathtub, and they're called sabots. And they gave them to adults too. And I happened to take a class on a weekend. It was all these men and me. And I turned out to love it. I was shocked how much I loved sailing. And there was even like a regatta going on. So it wasn't like, something could have happened.
Yeah.
But the fact that I was getting to experience this thrill of being on the current and learning how, the thing about sailing is like, there's like no control. You know, like you can guide your sale and you can learn how to do what you need to do, but you're sort of participating in nature, right?
Right.
So that was a thing that I think I needed to learn how to do, because I needed to remember that, you know, I think we forget this a lot as human beings. Like, we're always working with our environments too. And there's things that are helping us if we just open our eyes and pay attention to them.
And let go a little. Yeah. Let go of the control.
Yeah, you have to. You have to let yourself be.
What was it like speaking to and getting to, arranging to, and then speaking to President Jimmy Carter?
He is amazing. I have just countless good things to say about him. And I was very nervous about that because I really had no guarantees. And I don't think anyone ever really does. I found out from someone who sent me an email that he teaches Sunday school, or he did. Now he's on hospice right now, but he did teach it, I think, up until the age of 97, 96, something like that. He was 93 then. And I found out that he takes pictures.
I'm so confused though, Laura. Didn't Jimmy Carter pass?
No, he's still living. He's on hospice still. Since February, he's been on hospice. He's a very persistent person. Yes. Even now. I got a thank you note from him last week, because I sent him a book. I mean, someone in his office.
I'm an idiot.
Someone in his office wrote it for him.
Of course, I get that. But still, like, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to get on the Google. I was at a dinner party once a couple years ago, and we were talking about Betty White. I'm like, no, Betty White has passed. And they're like, no, she hasn't. I was like, I'm so sorry. Now she has. But okay. Okay. Jimmy Carter's alive. Yay. Okay. Sorry. This is me being me. This is, oh, by the way, my next book will be called Stupid Shit Sally Lou Loveman Says. All right, go on.
No. It's understandable.
Go on.
Most people don't live on hospice as long as he has. And it's been almost 6 months now. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But I just basically contacted the Carter Center, which is kind of his presidential library. And they gave me a free tour and they gave me a little bit of advice, you know, go to this inn and then that inn get you into the church.
And you're like, no, I need to check this off my list.
Yeah, I tried to explain that. They were very nice, though. Like, they were really helpful. And I ended up not being able to get into that inn, which made me a little nervous. But it was okay in the end, because I also was insisting that we hike Stone Mountain, which was the only place my dad had actually been to of the places I was traveling for the list. Like, I had these triumphant pictures of him on the top with his fist sticking out.
Wow.
Of course, I came to find out later they didn't hike it at all. They took a sky ride. Oh,
but you hiked it because you're a triathlete.
My husband and I hiked it. And there's a lot of mountain climbing happening, and not mountain climbing, but hiking happening in this book. So we actually got to the hotel at 11 o'clock at night, which was a little scary on back roads on the way to Queens, Georgia. But we met his biographer at the hotel counter, and I hit it off with him. And then I'm pretty sure he put in a good word for me, because by the time I did shake Jimmy Carter's hand after his amazing Sunday school lesson, we shared a few sentences with each other.
I mean, there are so many lessons in this book, but perseverance is one.
Yeah.
Forgiveness and love and facing your fears and you know, tackling you know, family history that might be hard, whatever it might be, but that is perseverance. And the fact that his biographer was sitting next to you, I mean, that doesn't just happen. Right. Oh, and you were going there like, yeah, he teaches Sunday school. Maybe I'll be able to be in the church, and maybe like, it was all on just maybe. And there you were.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. When that all came together, it really changed the way I was looking at it, for sure.
It had to have. I mean, that is a God moment for sure. Or you're a dad moment, one or the other, or the both. So before we close, I could talk to you about this. And first of all, do you have your own list? Have you made your own list?
There's 100 items and I've done 20 of them.
Stop it. Oh my gosh. Will that be a book?
I hope so. I would love for that to be a book. Yeah. My husband has one too. I think his has 6 items.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. So, okay. Easiest to hardest. We don't have time for all 100. Like, what is like the simplest thing that you've done that you want to do or you've done that's on the list, and the most, like, extraordinary, hard?
I think probably the two most extraordinary ones, but two of the ones I'm the most excited about are Sea of Volcano and Pet and Elephant.
Okay.
I have seen a volcano. I love volcanoes and elephants. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what's something that's just like easy, but like you haven't done it?
Cross the Brooklyn Bridge.
I've done that too. I have crossed the Brooklyn Bridge and I've seen a volcano. I'm so excited. I think the message is for everyone listening or watching is to make your list and do it. And then talk to the person in your life that's living right now, who may be your parent, maybe your aunt, maybe your uncle, somebody older than you, wiser than you, who wants to do things and may not get a chance to, so that you can do it for them. And you can tell them in this life to say, watch me, because when I am crossing that Brooklyn Bridge, because you haven't, give me a sign. And what's our sign going to be? Is it going to be butterflies?
I love that.
Is it going to be rainbows? What's it going to be?
I love that so much, Sally.
Because Sally Lou, but that's okay.
My whole life.
Oh, I only correct people because all of my friends, if they were to watch this, would be like, oh my God, they called her Sally.
I'm too familiar. I'm sorry.
No, it's too fun. No, Lou is familiar, but Sally is like, you don't know me. That's why I always try to like, explain. Anyway, sorry, I'm off topic. But I really, I mean, I sat with my father, as we all did, but I said to him, as on his last day, the day before he died, I said, this is not over. I need you to talk to me daily. I need you to be in my life. And I gave him that invitation. I said, I expect to hear from you. I want to hear from you. This is not over. And so I could go on and on about the signs and the things and all of that. But now my mom is 91 and I'm caring for her half the year. I live half the year in Philadelphia and I'm with her. And I had said this to her. I'm like, okay, what's going to be your sign? Because I think we should just address death as it's part of living. You know, it's in some cultures, it's the greatest accomplishment you can have. And in our culture, it's like fear, fear, fear. It's so fear-based. Let's look at it in a different way to say, okay, what no one can control when any one of us leaves this earth.
Right.
But just tell me what your sign's going to be, because I want to know.
Yeah, it's because I've had so many experiences now with my dad's spirit, I'm less afraid of death myself. Because
exactly.
I just feel like I want to do what's good for my eternal self, my spirit inside of me, more so than my human body, because that's going to go away someday.
Right. People don't get that, and that's okay, but wow, it feels good to get it. It is okay, I get it. Okay, final question. What did you learn about yourself through this?
To stop worrying so much about everything all the time, and whatever worry I might have might even not even be true. It might be a real thing about me, and to just always try. And
yeah,
I'm way more resourceful than I thought I was.
That is the truth. Worry is using your imagination for something you don't want. So basically stop worrying, because you're wasting time. We are wasting time. I'm talking to myself. Trust me. I was weaned on worry equals love. So I am a recovering worrier. I think to live in the moment, which is what your dad did beautifully. He may have done things wrong, but he did that right. So living in the moment. So thank you for that reminder from your dad, and you're carrying that on. So thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Post Hill Press is your publisher.
Yeah.
And where can we find your book?
I would go to buylaurakarney.com. There's lots of ways to buy it on there. Amazon, Target, Indiebound, if you want to do it that way. All those little buttons are on my website, buylaurakarney.com.
B-U-Y?
B-Y.
B-Y, buy. Okay.
Like a byline. Yeah, but B-Y.
Again, add it to my book. Stupid Shit Sally Lou Loveman Says. Buy, like as in the writer, buylaurakarney.com. Okay. And by the way, I didn't get what this was at first. I know it's watermelon, but I was like, I wonder why she picked that watermelon graphic. And now I know why. I dropped it. Because you grew one. Did you eat it?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you grow two or just one?
I've tried. It's interesting. People keep asking me that lately. And I did try a two more summers, which I didn't end up writing about. But
yeah,
it only worked that first time.
Hey, that was all that was on the list. Grow a watermelon.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Laura. Enjoy your book tour. I hope that it is everything you wanted and more. And the most important thing is that this story is going to allow others to grow with whatever, whether it's someone that they've lost or someone that they haven't lost or someone that they will lose, they will grow having read your book. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was so fun talking to you. Thank you.
I have loved speaking with you today, and I want to speak with you more. So follow me at Live Love Speaks. And if you want more stories like the stories we speak here on the Love Speaks series podcast, go to lovespeaks.com and pick up a copy of my book, Speak. Love your story. Your audience is waiting to step up your speaking game and your human game. And check out my blog while you're there. Thanks for listening. Your love speaks.